Well, brothers and sisters, it's a bit unfortunate, the title. It's Creation, Not Evolution. Not Creation and Evolution, as on the poster out there. It's all right, Martin. It's only a little thing. But I'm not going to talk about evolution at all, if I can avoid it. And looking around the room, none of you believe in evolution. None of you. And you all believe in creation, so I might as well sit down, really. But hopefully, what I'm going to go through today might be useful, because sadly, certainly true of my family, you may have family members or neighbours you do talk to, you see a lot, and they do believe in evolution. And when you get those rare opportunities, sadly all too rare in my case, but when you do get those opportunities, it's nice if you can have something you can just present quick and give them something to think about. And so today, I'm not going to apologise for doing this again. I've done a number of talks on this, and you've suffered quite a few. But that's part of the thinking. Well, we're going to look at the chicken head today. Simple thing like that. Now, apparently, I mean, obviously the figure's approximate, and it varies day by day. Perhaps there's a few more cracked open today, being a Sunday, I don't know. But 28 million eggs are consumed in Britain each day, something of that order, 28 million eggs. So, this is something most people are aware of. You know, I'm not talking about the wandering albatross, for instance. We're talking about chicken egg. There's eggs in just about every household. And I've got to say, even from a kid, I was always fascinated by the shape. I mean, just looking at it in 2D, it's an amazing oval. To me, it's, you know, just lovely symmetry about it. It's a beauty just in that. But of course, it's in 3D, which to me makes it even more special. It's a wondrous shape, really. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. A bit more scientifically, like, a bit more to the point now. There's a big distinction between the way mammals reproduce and birds and reptiles. Quite a few reptiles lay eggs. Because you take a mammal, the offspring's produced with inside the mother internally. Now that's not very good for you when you're pregnant, ladies, and I'm sure you could tell me that and tell the brethren that in uncertain terms, just in case we've forgotten. Not easy for you when you're carrying the child, particularly you get to 8, 9 months, it's getting really hard work. But in terms of the development of the baby, of that offspring of the mammal, that's nice and convenient, because as nutrients and various things are required within that period of pregnancy, the materials can be brought to it. But you see, with an egg, everything is external and the whole package is without. A lot easier for the parent bird, but everything has to be at the very beginning in that egg if there's going to be a new chicken. Just a simple point, but when you think about it, it's quite amazing, really, that everything is self-contained in that little package. Now, chicken egg, in terms of bird's eggs, is quite big, really. It's not as big as an ostrich egg, by any stretch of imagination, but when you think of, in our country, something like a gold crest or a long-tailed tit, a tiny little egg, and everything in that egg has got to be there, just the same. Now, what came first? It's an old classic riddle, isn't it? What came first, the chicken or the chicken egg? Yeah, we've all heard this one, haven't we? Well, from an evolution point of view, then I think they've got to say the chicken came first. Now, where you believe in creation, we have a definite answer. There's no thinking about it. We have a positive answer, brothers and sisters. Absolutely, no doubt about it. The chicken came first. But I explored this little question on the internet and came up with one or two passages which made me chuckle. And here's a classic one. In fact, the person who writes this paragraph, although an evolutionist, has a little chuckle to himself or herself as she writes. So in a nutshell, or in an eggshell if you like, two birds that weren't really chickens created a chicken egg. Hence we have an answer. The egg came first and then it hatched the chicken. Maybe the question we should be asking is, which came first, the proto-chicken or the proto-chicken egg? And once you've sorted that one out, you might as well go on, the proto-proto-chicken or the proto-pro... It's absolutely stupid if you think about it. And they almost feel, when they're writing about it, and they write something like that, they almost have to make it jokey, because they know it's stupid. But we have the answer. God created. And so God created every winged fowl. And the bird was created. And within that bird, the ability to reproduce was given. And the wonder of it, brothers and sisters, is not only that it was given the ability to reproduce exactly after its own kind. So we haven't got this evolution business of having to have many mutations to get the perfect outcome over millions of years. No, next generation, exactly the same. And that's just wondrous. But to me, the bigger wonder is that from that first pair, you get the next generation within it, and the one after that, and after that, after that, after that. All those generations all succeed from those original two birds, or original two dogs, or whatever they might be. So from the very first pair is that ability within. Staggering when you think about it. And so we have the answer to that. The chicken came first. No questions. So we've dealt with that. We'll move on. On one of our National Trust visits that we do, I tend to call it a little evergreen group. There's about 10 of us on a Friday morning. We do the readings together if we can. And sometimes we go to a National Trust base. We're going somewhere this week, aren't we, John? This Friday. And sometimes I get dragged into the gift shop, you know, as you do. And I saw a real bargain. I saw this book going for £1.50. So I thought, I'll get that. And it was worth the £1.50 for this quote. Jane Eastow, whoever she is, and I don't know whether she's a creationist or evolutionist, she's just a person that keeps hens. Nice little book, I have to say. But she says, eggs are a miracle of construction. One of the most extraordinary pieces of design on the planet. Both sophisticated and practical. I thought, wow, I'm having that in this talk. Brilliant, isn't it? Absolutely right. Summed it all up. It's a miracle of construction. She goes on, says something a little bit less profound. Indeed, have you ever been to a village egg throwing competition? Has anyone been to an egg village? Let's get it right. Egg throwing competition in a village? I've never heard of one, but apparently... She has. She said, it's great fun. Keen cricketers almost inevitably win. If you ever see one of them, you'll know that they are also remarkably resilient, even though an eggshell is only around a third of a millimetre thick. You know, just a very thin, and yet it's remarkably strong. And I thought, well, that's interesting. So I went on Google. Are there such things as... egg throwing competitions, and there are, and obviously this character didn't win, which I couldn't resist. I just had to put that in. But it's true, the eggshell, although it's very thin, it is remarkably strong. And talking about the strength of eggshell, someone was saying to me the other day that it's possible to stand on eggs. You get half a dozen. And you arrange them upright, it is possible for a human being, an adult, to stand on them. I wasn't to convince myself, and I'm certainly not going to try, unless you want to try that later. But what a shape, I'm going to come back to that. You know, I said to you, from a child, I was fascinated by the egg shape. Well, there it is again. And there are mathematical equations. Just thought I'd show you that. There's an equation for that shape, as there is an equation for the surface area, as there's an equation for its volume. You've got to have A-level maths, perhaps, to understand that formula, because you've got log functions in there. But nevertheless, there is, you know, there are equations for these things. And to me, that just proves there is a God. There's nothing at random or by chance with an equation, you know, with a formula. It's something that's fixed, that's it. And there's a beauty in that, that you can find that. And of course, Einstein was trying to get up a formula for actually proving the existence of God. That's going completely on a different level altogether. But there it is. There's a formula for the shape of that egg. Right, now the formation of an egg. How's it created within the bird? Well, I'm going to just talk you through this diagram. You can see our hen down at the bottom left-hand corner there. And there's the diagram. I don't even read that at the back very well, but the various processes have just gone through there on the diagram, but I'll talk it through nevertheless. The ovary releases an ovum or yolk on a regular cycle. If you've got good hens like Jill and Paul have got, the ovum that's happening every 24 hours. Yes? So you start off with your egg yolk and then it rotates. I'm not sure what causes it to start turning, but it does. It rotates along down the oviduct, and as it does, the walls are coated with a thick layer of albumin. That's what's going to be the white. Okay? And that takes, if you look on the diagram now, it says that takes about 3 hours. So the ovum is now getting covered over with white, with these layers of albumin, and it takes 3 hours. So it's quite a process, that. Next, a thickened cord called a chalaza is added to it. And they're the stringy bits in the egg. So when you fry up your eggs, and I've done this once or twice in my life, not too often. I've been very well blessed to have good cooks in my life. But the rare occasions when I've fried an egg, I've noticed the stringy bits. You know those stringy bits? That's the chalaza. And they're the strings that are needed to control this ovum going down, so it doesn't get stuck up one side. It moves nice and sweetly all the way down the middle, as it were, but rotating. So they're very important. And of course, an egg, and you all know this, if you had a boiled egg recently, you'll know that skin. There's two membranes, not one, there's two membranes that encase the egg. And they separate at the larger end of the egg to form an airspace. Now, when you boil an egg, you get a hard boiled egg and you peel the shell off. Have you ever noticed that little dent bit at the top? Yeah? You get that little dent bit at the top because that's where the air sac's been. And that airspace is critical. Now, none of this, brothers and sisters, is happening by chance, is it? None of it. It needs a mind to actually think of this and put it together. And then already at this point, if this hasn't happened, it's not going to work. Just not going to work. And then you come down to the final chamber where you get this secretion of lime, which is going to harden and form the eggshell. Now, you know, I'm a person with a very funny mind, I suppose. On things, weird things cross my brain which perhaps other people don't experience, but I've always sort of thought it's just fantastic, an egg, and you can laugh if you want, you can laugh at me, I'm not bothered. The eggshell is always even and uniform. It's not like you get a patch on the egg and it's 2 millimeters thick and then there's another patch on the egg and it's transparent. The eggshell is consistent all the way around. That always used to fascinate me again as a kid. I don't know why, I just weird like that. You know, why is it? It's just beautifully uniform. And yet when I put lime together, the few times I've put sand and cement and stuff together, to try and get it nice and uniform, I found that difficult. And if you do it once and you have to break off and you come back the next week to finish off the path or whatever, to get the same concrete, the same texture and everything, not impossible. I remember doing a path years ago and I had a sort of white section and then one that was sort of much darker. Presumably I just mixed it up differently. But an eggshell, it's consistent. It's that same thickness all the way around. Wonderful. And that's happening in that 20 hours. That's when most of the time's taken up. The whole thing takes 24 hours, but it's 20 hours spent on that. I must admit, I was surprised. But 20 hours for that to happen. Okay, so that's the egg. How about egg to the chick? So there's my Bobby Moore picture, for those who remember Bobby Moore. I had to put that one on. Right, Jill and Paul, you're not involved in this. Is anybody else keeping pens? We've got it in mind. Okay, so everybody else, and that's a fair contest. How many days does it take from egg to chick? I won't think less of you if you say 110 days. I might think...
Seven.
Pardon?
Seven.
Seven, thanks for that. Anybody else got another idea?
12.
12? Any other... I suggest you go a little bit higher, actually. Go on, we'll test if the experts really know this stuff. Go on, Paul. You don't know?
3 weeks.
Bang on, Paul. Don't put yourself down, lad. Absolutely right. Typically 21 days. Now, obviously, you could get one 22 days, as Jill's going to tell me, or you could have one 20 days. But typically, it's 21 days. Now, I know one or two of you, they want it in record time in 7 days, but I think 21's pretty good, going from the egg to the chick. And I think at this point, you know, we should say, Thou, even Thou art Lord alone. Thou hast made heaven, the heaven of heavens, with all their hosts, the earth, and all things that are therein, the seas, and all that is therein, and Thou preservest them all, and the host of heaven worshipeth Thee. You know, these faithful men in the days of Nehemiah got it right. God is majestic, all-powerful, and all-caring, that all creation is not only brought into being, but is sustained. And in that context, of course, they're marvelling that God has looked after the nation of Israel against the mighty foe. So the package. What's in the glass? Now, I'm too nervous this morning. You probably think I don't get nervous, but I'm all shaky. So I've said to Martin, he's got to do this. Because if I do it, it'll be all over the place. And my experience of cracking eggs, as I've already said, in truth, is limited. So come on, Martin. This is how you're going to get on MasterChef.
Two hands, not one.
I don't care if you use a foot.
Stand on it.
As long as you get that ingredients in that glass.
It's not hard boiled, is it?
It's not a joke. I wouldn't dare do that. I've got some paper just in case you make a mess. Put the Bible over there. Go on, Martin. I've got to finish at 25-2. Well done. Oh, well done. Yeah. I'll take this away one minute.
No, I thought you were going to shout.
No. Okay, now. There it is. Now, putting to one side, you know, whether it's fertilised or not. Okay, just put that to one side for the moment. You know, there it is. So what's in the glass? Going to get a bird out of that. It's only going to take 3 weeks. I'll tell you what's in the glass. That I can understand. The 14 amino acids necessary for life. 13, no good. Got to be 14. It's got to be all 14. So where's the evolution in that? You can't go 1, 2, 3. No, it's got to be 14 at the beginning or it's nothing. You need all these vitamins. And those vitamins are in there. That's why my grandmother, who lived to 95, used to drink a raw egg every morning. If she'd done two, she might have lived to 100, I don't know, but... And she didn't convince me of the worth of it, I must admit. And I don't think I ever saw her do it. I'm sure if I did, I would have remembered. But apparently she used to have raw egg every morning. Because there's vitamin A, there's vitamin D, there's B1 thiamine, there's B2 riboflavin that I see on the side of the cornflakes packet, as I did this morning. B6, B12, all in that glass, all necessary. Is that it? No, there's a bit more than that. There's niacin, there's folate, the biotin, and pantothenic acid. Someone explained to me the other day about that, a few weeks ago, what that was. Unfortunately, I've forgotten. She was in the nursing profession, so perhaps if there's a nurse or two here, not looking at Nikki in particular, you might better tell me. But apparently that's very important, that particular acid. But there's also iodine, there's choline, zinc, calcium, and there's phosphorus. All in the glass. In the right quantities. All got to be there. This is why you believe in creation, brothers and sisters. You don't believe in evolution. Because you, like me, wonder at that. Just fantastic. It's there. And within that glass, somehow, there's going to be a respiration system, the ability to breathe. There's going to be a food supply. And by the way, that's for that which has been created within the egg. That's all going to be actually in the egg. There'll be a change of system of breathing as we get the young chick. But even in the process of being made into a chick, there's a special breathing system. That's all in the glass. There's shock protection. We've talked a little bit about that with the Chaza. There's a shock protection system. Believe it or not, there's bacterial defence. All in the glass. And this is the big thing. This is, to me, it's so supreme. For all those physical things, for all those things that are hard and fast, if you like, or they become hard and fast, you know, there's a development program. You know, this computer, and we've got Martin, one or two people in the room who are up to whiz kids of computing and all the rest of it, and we talk about hardware and software. Well, I can handle the old hardware just about. Tell me the right buttons to press. But as to what's going in the gubbins there, it's a complete mystery what's going on. You know, the software. Wow, what's happening? There's a program in there. Unseen to us. There's a program in there which changes that to muscles, to bones, to nerves, to blood, to feathers, to eyes, to a reproduction system, to be repeated again. And I'm in awe of that. I'm in absolute awe of that. And I'm going to top it again. I'm going to go up another level, because to me the next one is another level again. Behavioural characteristics is in the glass. Again, this is a recent thought, not when I was a kid. It's strange, you go in the park and you take your grandchildren. I'm pleased to do that these days. It's wonderful, isn't it? You take the kids to the park, you know, maybe Coombe Abbey or whatever, and you've hardly got the bread out of the packet, and there they are. Yeah, the Canada geese, you've got to watch them, because, you know, they take Ezra's hand off if you're not careful. And you've got your mallards, and you've got other birds are going in the opposite direction. You never get a moorhen around your feet, or a coot around your feet. Now, they're on the same pole, but they're going in the opposite direction. Behavioural characteristics. Why is it mallards are quite bold and confident to come up to human beings? And then, not so long ago, mallards were getting shot for food. And I dare say now and then people shoot them for fun. But they're not particularly bothered. Why is it I've got a wren in my garden that goes in our little Forsythia bush, and it seems to spend half its day in that bush, and every now and then it dips out, and you see it. But generally, it's sort of hidden within the bush, and it's just picking off the insects and so on, and that's about all it does. I bet in its whole life, it probably doesn't go any further than 50 yards. But most of the time, it seems to be in that bush. And yet, I can talk to you about a wandering albatross that's born on a ledge on an island, in the Wendell scene down in the Antarctic, and then it'll get to maturity, and it'll take a long time to do that, by the way, and it'll leave the nest, and it flies for 2 years across the Pacific Ocean, thousands of miles. It may even come up to British waters, as one last year came up to British waters. Come up to British waters, and after 2 years, it'll go all the way back to the same ledge and lay its own egg. And my wren's still knocking around in the garden. Behavioural characteristics. You know, it's like our personalities, brothers and sisters. What makes one of us so shy and quiet and retiring like me? And what makes another so loud and brash? It's in the glass. Paul, I've got to ask you this. Is there a pecking order with chickens?
There is at the outset if you put a bunch of them together.
What happens?
The one will take control, pecking, bursting at the food and keeping the others away.
Yeah, so the new girl gets a rough time. That's what you told me. Don't let me down now.
That's what you're jumping at.
I was expecting a bit more, really. But it's true, Paul, isn't it? It's a pecking order.
It is, yeah.
So how many chickens you got?
At the minute, it's seven.
Yeah, and there's one of those is the one top one, the boss.
Yes.
That's the boss. And now we've all heard about the pecking order. Well, it's from people keeping hens. But what is it? It's a behavioural characteristic. That's what they are, that's what they're like. Behavioural characteristic. In there. Let me just shake it around a bit. It's all in there, brothers and sisters. I'll perhaps spend longer on that than I ought to. Oh, by the way, when it comes to the egg, I know Martin took the eggshell away. Well, he's left it down there. But when you think about it, there isn't much left over, is there? And some birds will even eat the eggshell. The young bird will come out, or particularly lizards seem to do it more actually. The lizard will come out the shell and then eat the shell it was contained in. And certainly other birds will eat other birds' eggshells and so on. So nothing goes to waste. You know, a cuckoo, when it's taking the egg out of the nest of a reed warbler, whatever it might be, we'll take the opportunity of eating it. You know, let's get that down. Now we've got the new, you know. So nothing goes to waste. There's no surplus. No surplus at all. And I've talked to one or two quantity surveyors in the last few months when I've given this talk. This is about the fourth time I think Ellen's had to suffer it. Actually, it might be more than that. Anyway, and I've said to them, when you plan out a building site or some project, is there any surplus? I know that's a bit of an unfair question, because I know there will be. Because if there isn't any surplus, it means they run short. And can you imagine the phone calls? You know, the workmen come up and the materials are not there. They're jumping up and down on the spot. Can you imagine? And when there's, you know, you move into a new house, not like I've done it, but I know people move into a new house and they're trying to turn over that new garden. There's half a brick here and there's a brick over there and a bit of pipe over it, yeah? There's always surplus. In any building project that men do, there's always stuff over. You can't get it right. And the better quantity surveyor you are, it's getting the actual percentage down so there's less waste as possible. But there's always a tolerance. It's always an understanding that, yeah, there will be so much cable over. Yes, there will be too much bags of cement. That's going to happen. But with that, there's nothing really over. There is no surplus. And I say, even the shell will decompose and make the ground good if it hasn't been eaten already. just look at this diagram of the egg again, and I just want to talk to you now about the development now of that bird. The embryo is attached to the yolk at the centre of the egg, surrounded by rubbery egg white. Now, on our diagram, can you see at the very top, I've got embryo. Can you see the red spot? Can you see that red spot? No, I'm looking in here now. Unfortunately, I can't see it. But those of you who've done a bit of cooking, have you ever noticed a red spot in the egg? Yeah? Can't see it on there today. But that's the embryo. So we're not even talking about the egg now. We've gone right down to the smallest bit here. That's absolutely vital. It's easy for us to understand. Go to that embryo. And the chalaza anchor firmly the ovum to the ends of the egg and allow it to rotate if the egg is disturbed. So those strings, and you can see the lines drawn left and right, those, the chalaza, it's to help in terms of the shock, but also it's there to make sure that red spot is at the top. Spot on the yolk where the embryo grows is less dense than the rest. So the yolk rotates in its cradle until the embryo is uppermost, next to the warmth of the mother hen, sitting on a nest. So that red spot, that embryo, has to be at the top. So the mother bird sits on the eggs, and that's there getting the most warmth. So the fact that it's less dense there, the fact that you've got these chalaza that makes a bit of movement, the strings, all that comes together. So that red spot is always at the top. Now, after a couple of days, 2 or 3 days, it's not so vital. You know, and then you get the hen bird, probably move the eggs around or something. And I know hen keepers, I don't know if you do, Paul, and you can turn the eggs around them if you wanted to get the chicks, but you didn't want to go that far, do you? But you move them around. But in the first couple of days, for the process to start, you've got to have that red spot at the top for the warmth. As the chick grows from that red spot, in effect, a bloom-like membrane spreads out from the navel, which is rich in arteries and veins. This eventually surrounds the chick on all sides and comes to lie next to the shell. The smooth eggshell is made from tiny granules of calcium carbonate, chalk, and there are 10,000 tiny pores which are plugged in with a waxy film. Now, I'm talking about the eggshell now. There's a diagram of it. You've got these pores, and you need those pores for the transfer of the gases. But you need a waxy layer to keep the bacteria out. Now, can you imagine now, you've got to get the balance right, that it's got to be an opening enough for the transfer of the gas, but it's not going to be so big the bacteria get in, so there's the wax. Seems to be an impossible task. So that's what's going on. Oxygen is able to diffuse downwards through these pores and enter the veins in the membrane below, from where it is carried back to the heart. Similarly, carbon dioxide can work its way outwards from the arteries to the shell membrane, leaving the embryo's blood free from the poisonous gas. So it starts to do that transfer. So this is the breathing system that's organised in there while the bird's been created. The waxy layer, which I've already referred to, has an enzyme, isozyme, which attacks and destroys any bacteria that do happen to penetrate the pores. So they do get through. There's wonderfully a defense system. There's an enzyme there to deal with it. And it's not a good idea, brothers and sisters, you have eggs, and by perchance, if they're dirty, don't wash them. Do not do that, because your eggs will go off quicker if you do that. And Tesco, Sainsbury's, Waitrose, all those have a problem because they can't have eggs on the shelf. They've got marks on because it doesn't look attractive to the buyer. But at the same token, if they wipe them off, they wipe off the wax. That means they'll go off. So what do? They throw them away. That's the sad Western world we're in. In the good old days, you got sold your eggs with the marks on, whatever they were, a bit of feather or whatever it was. And rightly so. You don't want to take that waxy bloom off in a hurry. O Lord, how manifold are thy works. In wisdom hast thou made them all. The earth is full of thy riches. Wisdom. There's a photograph. This bird only took 20 days, but there it is. Top left corner, bottom right, 20 days. There's the wonder of photography. And I've said this before, brothers and sisters, I'll say it again. In 2018, men and women who have access to these things, like we can see these photographs and so on, have less excuse than people of previous generations. We have access to more wonder and more evidence that there is a designer. There it is. And the most critical day, if I dare say that, I think it's the 18th day. Because on the 18th day, the chip turns around in the shell so that its beak is pointing under its right shoulder towards the large end of the egg. And it's interesting, brothers and sisters, it's always the right shoulder. Never the left. It's always the right shoulder. I don't know why, but it's always the right shoulder. And it's always on the 18th day. Plus or minus one. Anyway, the fact is, it turns, gets into position to access the air sac. I'm going on a little bit, but I've got to ask you this question. When you crack up, open your boiled egg, do you have your boiled egg in the egg holder there with a pointed bit up top, or do you have it with the fat end at the top, the large end at the top? Have a little think about it. It's a tough question, so have a little think about it. First, put your hands up, you have it pointed way up. Okay. Well, I'll give you the satisfaction of knowing that you are well and truly in the majority. In all the surveys I've done in the last few times, again, this thought, most people do that. Now then, who has it their fat way up? Martin, we're ahead of them. We're totally ahead of them. Because you've worked out, I've worked out long time ago, Martin, that blooming thing's hot. You don't want to touch it too much, but you get your spoon and you bang and you break open the air sac, don't you?
Yeah.
It's hollow there, then it's easy to peel it, isn't it? What are these lot paying about? you have to be a genius to work it out. And it's not going to roll out of the egg. No, don't give me that. Are you with me? I think if you turn it around the other way next time, you'll find it a lot easier to get the eggshell off. Because you don't use a knife, you're not going to do that. It's just the chicken's way out. Okay, so it's now got access to that, it's in position to access that bubble of air. But to break through, it needs an egg tooth. And so it's developed a small, tough cap on the tip of its beak. And that will be on its tip of its beak to that break through, and then it will fall off after a few days. If you see hatchlings, birds, you see they often have that, you know, it's blackbirds or whatever, you see they have that. And after about 3-4 days it goes. Fantastic. Honestly, I'm coming towards the end. So that's the bird now on the 18th day. And there's something else that's fantastic. The yolk that remains is so rich with globules of oil. It's so nutritional that the yolk then goes into the body of the young bird. I'm tempted to say young chick because it's good as now. Goes into it through the navel, brought in, and then in the next couple of days that's healed over. Fantastic, isn't it? And the energy from that yolk will keep the bird going for at least 2 days of its life as a chick. God has provided for the first 2 days, and that happens on the 18th day. It's just enough time for the heal over, and it's there in preparation of the bird. I think it's about time we had Psalm 148 read.
Psalm 148. Praise ye the Lord. Praise ye the Lord from the heavens. Praise him in all the heights. Praise ye him, all his angels. Praise ye him, all his hosts. Praise ye him, sun and moon. Praise him, all ye stars of light. Praise him, ye heavens of heavens, and ye waters that be above the heavens. Let them praise the name of the Lord, for he commanded, and they were created. He hath also established them for ever and ever. He hath made a decree which shall not pass. Praise the Lord from the earth, ye dragons and all deeps. Fire and hail, snow and vapour, stormy wind fulfilling his word. Mountains and all hills, fruitful trees and all cedars, beasts and all cattle, creeping things and flying fowl. Kings of the earth and all people, princes and all judges of the earth, both young men and maidens, old men and children, let them praise the name of the Lord, for his name alone is excellent. His glory is above the earth and heaven. He also exalteth the horn of his people, the praise of all his saints, even all the children of Israel, a people near unto him. Praise ye the Lord.